Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the grill room is definitely on our tab. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
It's time for the most comprehensive look inside the world of professional golf, wherever it's played. I'm Bob Bubka. We have our traveling man, Alex Maselli, who's in Turkey. Alex, bring us up to date. How was the trip over? And I would like you, if you could, three things that are different while I'm in Turkey than if I'm in California.
Oh, well. Well, the trip over was long, as usual, about 17, 18 hours. But, you know, it is what it is. The flight to Istanbul was fine. And then you wait for a couple hours at least to get on a plane to go to Antalya, which is on the coast, the Mediterranean coast. It's about 2 hours from Istanbul. And if people are wondering, it's a lot further away from the Syrian border, which is always an issue. But, you know, outside of that, it's fine. I think that if you had to think of different things, I mean, the food is completely different than it would be in California. It's very good here. I mean, everything is good. I really enjoy it. Where we are is, as I said, is in Antalya, but we're in Belek, which is about probably 30 minutes from the airport. And it's an area where if there's 15 courses, 20 courses in all of Turkey, about 17 of them are in Belek or this area. So it's a pretty much of a resort area. Matthew Fitzpatrick, who won the British Masters earlier this year and won the U.S. Amateur, he's in Turkey for the first time. And one of the things he liked about Turkey is the fact that where we are staying, which is the custom around most of these hotels here, it's all inclusive. So basically, once you write your check for coming, you don't have to pay for anything else. So he liked that idea. It's just kind of a different place. I mean, I think the weather is very similar to what California would be like, Bob. The trees, the look, the feel is, of course, there's not too many Roman ruins in California.
Let me ask you this, Alex. We've both been to Costa del Sol on the coast in Spain. Is it comparable?
Yeah, it is. I mean, and if you think about it, it makes sense. It's comparable. Certainly, it's that kind of thing. You know, like, you know, places where you would grow, see trees with olive trees and things like that. Some mountains. It's not lush, meaning grass everywhere. That's the difference. But I mean, California is a pretty good example of what Turkey would be like in a lot of ways. I think there's probably a little more green in Turkey than there is in California generally. But bottom line is, it's very similar to what California would be, not only weather-wise, but look and feel. So it's a very, very, very nice place. I really enjoyed it when I first came here, and this is my fourth trip here. I think if you come, though, you have to go to Istanbul, which is completely different than any city we have in the United States.
Would you see camels on the streets in Istanbul?
No, you wouldn't see camels. I mean, certainly not in 2015. What they were doing in 1915, I can't answer. But in 2015, no camels.
Obviously, you know, a 17-hour flight is not easy. It's certainly made easier by, you know, making that sharp left turn when you got onto the airplane heading towards where the pilot sits, or right behind him, I should say. You must have a little compassion for, like, if I had to make that flight, I mean, I'd be way in the back of the plane, and then it would really be a long flight. I mean, where you sat, probably pretty lush.
Well, the only reason you'd be in the back of the plane, Bob, is because we'd need some balance in the back. That's why.
Yeah. It's not your wallet and my weight. That's perfect balance there anyway. Well, I'm glad you're there safe and sound. It certainly sounds like a delightful place. Nothing better to hear that the competitors that are competing there like that location. And boy, you know. Sounds like a winner. Anybody has that exotic bucket list based on what Alex has told us, I certainly would put that on my bucket list.
No, absolutely. I think you should definitely come to Turkey. And there's other places I'm sure you could go to, too. But Turkey is just, it's a safe place. It's a nice place. The people are nice. The food is good. So, I mean, I definitely would come here. Compared to other places I've been, there's no question it'd be the best place to go. But I know we got to move on, Bobby. So I know we're going to go to break here. But as we go to break, let me just say that the Grill Room is proud to be doing our part to entertain the active men and women in our military, but also the veterans as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network. Remember, you're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfBlot.com and Golf Week, heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network. We'll go around the world of golf when we return.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Jordan Spieth agrees.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Make Coolbrella the next purchase for your golf bag. The Coolbrella is instant portable shade. It's an umbrella that reflects the sun, offering portable, effective protection from the sun. Whether playing or spectating, the Coolbrella protects from the harsh rays of the sun while providing a cool, comfortable shade. For more information on the perfect gift for you or any golfer, log on to Coolbrella.com. That's Coolbrella.com. Coolbrella, instant shade and all-weather comfort.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Welcome back to the Grow Room, and it goes without saying, we certainly appreciate that you taking the time and listen to us, whether it be on the Armed Forces Radio, however you get the Grow Room, you make the effort, we display our appreciation.
I am a traveling man, well I ain't.
All right, you hear the music in the background, Traveling Man. And first, let's begin. Alex, you're overseas, but hey, I'm sure you've been able to catch up on what has been accomplished by Lydia Ko. A 9-shot win on the Fupon LPGA Taiwan Championship. This girl is amazing.
Well, I mean, she certainly seems to be that way, Bobby. She's playing very well. She's not even 22 years old. We're familiar with the 21-year-old and how they are doing this year. And when you look at somebody like Jordan Spieth, now you see Lydia Ko. But I think the difference with Lydia Ko is, you know, she has just taken the LPGA by storm. I don't know if there's anyone that I can remember that has had that much success that young. I mean, we'll talk about Annika Sorenstam, and we can talk about some of the other ladies, but no one this young has come out and been, it's fair to say, this dominant in the short period of time that they've been out there. And she was even dominant at times when she wasn't even on the tour. So there's no question that she is she's doing exactly what people said she could do when she was young, when she was 16 and 17 years old. Now look at her, only 18 years old, a long way away from getting to the Jordan Spieth era. But there's no question that her game transfers very, very well to the professional ranks.
You know, Alex, a good example we can give, Nancy Lopez certainly was a phenom and proved to be one of the all-time greats that ever played on the LPGA Tour. And Lydia Ko has gotten to 10 victories 3.5 years ahead of the unbelievable pace set by Nancy Lopez. And I think that gives our listeners a good insight into just how incredible Lydia Ko really is.
You know, and I wonder, Bob, if you balance, and I can't say I could do this, but we always talk, you know, it's pretty hard to talk cross eras. We do it in the PGA Tour all the time, and it's we're actually going to be talking, you know, we would talk about Tiger versus Jack and Arnold and his era. We would talk about, we'll probably start talking about at some point, you know, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Rory McIlroy against the Tiger Woods era. So, I mean, it's very hard to do. But we always used to say that in Jack's era, maybe they didn't have as many good players, but the players that were good were really good at the top of the board. I mean, the top 10 or 15 guys. Then we would say on the PGA Tour, basically any week now, every one of them are very good. So I don't know where that stands between when Nancy was playing and if there was a situation where she had a lot of good players around her, or there was a crop of good players and the rest of them were just okay. But I can tell you in this era of Lydia Ko, many of these players are very, very good. So she's beating a much bigger swath, I would think, of very good players.
And she's doing it in fine style, an outstanding young lady. Quickly over to the European Tour. Justin Rose wins the UBS, Hong Kong Open. It's his 8th European Tour title. Was his only win on the European Tour this year. But no surprise when Justin Rose gets the job done.
Well, it's not. I mean, usually it has to do with his putter. But also, I think what's happening for him is he went ahead and made the switch to the same driver that Jason Day was playing at the PGA Championship that TaylorMade M1. And it's a tremendous driver in regards to length. And I think that probably helped out as well. I know that the course at Hong Kong is one that's narrow. And it's probably it's a little shorter than most of the courses they play on the European Tour. But it's a favorite of most European Tour players. So, obviously, Justin Rose, again, if you look, played some really good golf against a pretty good competition.
And, you know, Alex, we have to bring up the fact of Ian Poulter, who accepted a last-minute sponsor's exemption. You say, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, it was a big deal as far as Ian Poulter is concerned because he needed 13 events on the European Tour to keep his European Tour card and thus be eligible to be a Ryder Cup player, and this was the 13th event. So good news that Ian Poulter at least now is eligible for when we go to Hazeltine in September of 2016. Whether he makes the team on points, if he doesn't, I would think he'd be an awfully strong candidate to be a captain's pick.
You know what? I'm going to talk to about Poulter in a second, because actually in Turkey, which we're so far ahead, had some time with Ian Poulter today, which would be Tuesday. So why don't we hear from Justin Rose talking about getting it done, and then let's come back to Poulter.
Yeah, it was a great duel all weekend and very, very happy to get the job done. Had a chance to win in Napa last week. I was tied for the lead going down the 10th hole and kind of let that one just sort of fritter away a little bit. And, I wanted to hang on to this one, so that was great.
Well, so that was obviously Justin Rose talking about getting it done, his 8th European Tour win, as Bob said earlier. But with Poulter, what's interesting is this whole thing of having to play 13 events on a tour to keep your card. This week in Turkey, we have the defending champion, which is Brooks Koepka. He is not coming to defend his title here. He has decided not to keep his European Tour card. He's told the European Tour that he's not going to continue playing on the European Tour on a regular basis because of the difficulties of playing on both tours. And there is some discussion about maybe one of the problems Koepka had was he was having an issue with the tour giving him his releases to be able to play in certain events. In Ian Poulter's case, who doesn't require releases because this is his home tour, the European Tour, he still says it's a very difficult thing. And in talking to him today, I said, you know, what do you do? You look at it from an individual player standpoint, and you look at it from a member of the tour standpoint. Generally, they put these provisions in place about how many events you have to play to protect the tour. And I asked him if the tour still needed protection, and he said the tour still does need protection. He goes, you know, we want to continue to have a vibrant tour here because we want to have a vibrant Ryder Cup team. And if we don't protect this tour, then all of a sudden that's going to go away. And I said, well, that's fine, but what do you need? What has to happen here to go ahead and have a vibrant European tour? What will require these players that play on the U.S. tour to come back more and more? And he said, basically, sponsorship dollars. And their tour is set up so much different than our tour, Bob, as you know, because we in the PGA Tour rely more heavily on television dollars than the European Tour does. I mean, the deals are never anywhere close to the same of what the dollars are in a TV deal here and a TV deal in the United States. So they require much more heavily on sponsorship dollars, and that is what the new commissioner or the new executive director, I guess he is, or CEO, Pelley is working on. Keith Pelley is working on, is trying to get more and more sponsorship dollars into this tour. And at the same time, he's working on a program that will probably limit in regards to how many starts you have to have on the European tour going forward, from maybe down to even 11 starts. So, you know, those are all things that will help the players in the United States. But that is one of the issues that they have here, is this whole idea of you have to play more, but yet the dollars aren't where they need to be.
You know, Alex, I've been hearing some rumbling in the brush about some exciting news for the European Tour, that there might be some more playing opportunities on the European Tour in exciting places. This is being leaked rather intentionally or unintentionally out of the new commissioner's office. Have you heard anything along those lines?
Well, I'll give you an example that I know that I'm aware of, and I'm going to give you it more in a hypothetical more than anything else. There's a situation where you could create another event in a country for a purse of maybe 3 million euro or 3 million pounds, I should say. Or instead of creating that event in that country, you could take that money, that 3 million pounds, and put it into a purse of an event that already exists there and make it an $8 million purse. And I think, you know, those are the things that they're working with now. Not struggling with, but we're working with now. And then trying to determine, would you rather have two events of lesser dollars or pounds, or would you like to have one big event of more pounds and a more focused event where more players would be more interested? And I think those are the things that Keith Pelley is trying to work on right now. And those are the things you're going to find in the announcements as they start announcing the scheduling for 2016, that you're going to start seeing some more of that. I also know that the commissioner's office in this particular case is going to go ahead and put more money into more events so that the purses generally are bigger than they had been in the past.
Well, we wish Mr. Pelley a world of luck. Got some big shoes to follow in the retirement of a good friend of the Grow Room and has been for years, George O'Grady. And then actually before him, who was it? Ken Schofield was the director, also a very good friend of the Grow Room. And finally on the PGA Tour, we'll come back to the United States. Shriners Hospital for Children's Open. Las Vegas proved to be a lucky spot for one individual, Smiley Kaufman, 23 years old, rookie on the PGA Tour, remarkable, you know, shot 61, Alex, on Sunday to win. 61, you know, anytime, anywhere, on any golf course is a remarkable number. When you shoot 61 in the fourth and final round of a U.S. PGA Tour stop, it is truly remarkable.
Well, it is. And I mean, when you think about the fact that he was 6 under going into the day and finished 16 under. So that means for 3 rounds, he found a way to get 2 under for each round. And then he shoots 10 under. And it was a number that no one could eclipse or even come close enough to get into a playoff. And there were a lot of good guys playing to get themselves in a playoff. And I found what's interesting, Twitter is always I like Twitter, to use Twitter. And as I was watching this go down, and what was left was, I can't remember the guy's name, Stigmeyer, whatever his name was, and Smiley Kaufman. And they were really the two guys left. And I tweeted about the fact that here's one, you know, you got one guy who I've never even heard of being chased by another guy I never even heard of. And a lot of people took offense to that, but it's true. I mean, anybody that wants to raise their hands and say, I know both of these guys, and there's all this about this and that, that's not true. These guys are not people that most people would know, especially if they follow golf. So it just shows you the depth of the PGA Tour. And now we have two rookies win in a row, which is the first time that's happened since 2011 when you had Charles Schwartzel and Steele win. Schwartzel won the Masters and Steele won the Zurich in New Orleans. So it's been a while. It's just an amazing thing. And the question is what happens when we get the CIMB? I don't know how many rookies we're going to have there, but, you know, Patton Kizzire played so well this week. He finished, I think he finished tied for second. There's another guy that all of a sudden, there's no question that he could win on this tour as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if he won next week.
Well, I'm going to answer one question you posed. There are no rookies at CIMB. And number two, I'd like to know from you, what year did Smiley Kaufman graduate from the economics course that you teach? And I feel safe in saying that he went to the Alex Maselli cost of living course, because the driver he's using, a 2012 Cleveland driver, retail value right now $36, and he wins well over $1 million using it. And let's give a listen to what Smiley had to say.
You know, I did the best I could today, and if it wasn't good enough, then I could hang my head high. I left it all out there and posted a number, and you know, luckily it held up. Walking down 16, I talked to my caddy, Aaron, and he was, I was thinking we needed a birdie. 1600, we felt like could be the number that might hold up or get in a playoff. We didn't think 15 was good enough. And so we kind of got in the mindset on 18 fairway that we need a birdie. So, and luckily it made an awesome putt, and, you know, here I am.
All right, Smiley Kaufman in Las Vegas. The only thing makes it better in this story, Alex, take a guess at what Smiley Kaufman's brother's name is.
I have no idea.
It's Las Vegas. His brother's name is Lucky Kaufman.
You know, Bobby, I have to say, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this is these we used to kind of, maybe the tour used to be all about the web.com tour, and they'd promote it and we'd talk about it, but it really wasn't that big a deal. And they'd say, you know, Jeff Maggard, who did a drive-by one day, anytime you won web.com graduate, and a lot of guys that really didn't really play much out there, web.com graduates. But these guys that are coming out now are seriously web.com graduates, the Patton Kizzires, the Smiley Kaufmans. And, you know, I know he talked about after his win, he talked about being on the web.com tour. And I think it's a much more significant place now to learn how to play on the PGA Tour than might have been in the past.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Alex, because I have been thinking, based on the results of these guys in the early going, and I, for one, was dead against the elimination of Q School. I thought that it was a valuable asset to the world of professional golf. But I must admit, now that the playing on the web.com tour and competing for an entire year in order to get your card to go on the PGA Tour, I think is proven in the early going that it's a much sounder way of identifying talent that it's eligible to play on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, and I think Smiley actually had a little kind of discussed that when he was talking about talking about his win. So let's get a listen to that as well.
The web.com for me was perfect because it taught me how to travel, how to prepare, how to make a cut, how to handle rounds that were not going in the right direction, and how to turn those things around. And as a 21, 22-year-old, I don't think I was quite ready to handle those type of motions. And a full year on the web.com really kind of matured me in a way, and made it to where I was able to be smarter in those situations and not get ahead of myself. And that was kind of the mindset I had today. I just kind of, on that back nine, I just made sure I was just stayed in every moment and just committed every shot, and understood that I was going to have thoughts about looking forward, but overall, I think I handled everything pretty well and stayed committed to most every one of my golf shots.
Smiley Kaufman, congratulations on that big victory. Now it's time to give our sponsors a little airtime. When we return, though, it'll be time for Alex's favorite segment, News and Notes. You're listening to The Grow Room, powered by GolfBlot.com and Golf Week, heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. And because of their efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, a course that is more sustainable, and one that offers natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The Golden Bear agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Well, I promised it. News and notes. Don't want to let my man down, even though he is enjoying himself in Turkey for this special edition of the Grow Room. News and notes is next. The RNA and the USGA announced the rule changes. Only do it every 4 years. A couple of rules that I think are worth discussing on the Grow Room, Alex, for our listeners. We'll try and keep it simple. Obviously, it's not easy to describe rules of golf when you're trying to do it on television, when you can use pictures, but even harder when you have to use only words. The big rule change, the granddaddy of them all, I guess, January 1st, no more anchoring of the putter. They did explain a couple of variations of the grip. They said that you know, certain grips are going to be allowed and other grips are not going to be allowed. Matt Kuchar, the way he puts that ball on, I mean, the way he puts that club on his arm, that's going to be allowed. They don't call that anchoring. Some people would disagree, but going to wait and see what happens to some of these players, Alex, when they're no longer able to anchor that putter.
Well, I mean, they're right. I mean, there's two people that come to – well, there's actually three people that come to mind. Tim Clark, who has a physical ailment, which is part of the reason why he anchors. Carl Peterson, who has not done anything but anchored since he turned pro and was out on the PGA Tour. And then Bernhard Langer, who has anchored for his entire Champions Tour career, which has been a very successful one. It'll be interesting to see what those three guys do. The rest of them – we'll figure it out. The other ones, I think it's going to be a little tougher.
Yeah, really going to be interesting to follow that starting on January 1st. Another rule change, signing a scorecard for a lower score because you were not aware that you had incurred a penalty will no longer require disqualification from the event. The adjustment will be made on your score, and you'll be allowed to continue. They also modified the penalty for using a not allowed artificial device, for example, a range finder. In the past, if a range finder was used during competition, you were automatically DQ'd. Now it's a two-stroke penalty. I don't know if I agree with that or not. I mean, you have to know ahead of time about range finders. I find it strange that you would use one.
Well, you would say the same thing about the one ball rule, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I guess you're right there. You know, you should know that only one type of ball is you know, allowed during any competition. I'm going to get your feelings on the amateur status, Alex. If you went from a professional back to an amateur, previously it took 6 years. They've reduced that down to 1 year. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think that's a very good rule. if you want to play professional golf, that's great. And if you decide to stop playing professional golf, I think you need to do a little more than a year. I know it's not supposed to be prison, but I mean, I think that you should, there's more involved with that. And I think you gain a lot from playing professional golf that that makes it unfair when you come back to the amateur ranks just a year out. So I think that's not, I don't like that rule. I do like the fact that the money things have been dealt with, proper compensation for amateurs if they're using it for travel and so forth and so on. But I think the one of the biggest rules outside of anchoring that's a change, Bob, is the fact that now there's a presumption that the ball move when you're on the green or you're in a on the golf course anywhere, and you address the ball and the ball moves. Previously, the presumption was you made it move. Now the presumption is you haven't made it move, unless there's evidence to show that somehow you did make it move. And I think that's a huge difference, especially when on the greens when you have windier conditions. And now we mow greens at such a low grass height that clearly the ball can move very easily without you doing anything. And it just would be, it seems unfortunate that if you're standing over the putt and you have your club on the ground and the ball moves, even though you haven't touched it, that somehow, some way they deemed that you had touched it or you had made it move, which is impossible. So I think that is a significant rule. That is a rule that will be used a lot, I think, on the PGA Tour. There's, you know, when people back off now, it's not as necessary. You would still have to replace the ball, but now it's not the same thing as before where you would just, oh my gosh, it moved, and then all of a sudden we're talking about, you know, we're talking about if it did move or didn't move, and we're talking about, you know, did it oscillate in its place. Now none of that's going to matter, especially if you have, as long as you didn't cause it to do, cause the movement.
Well, I'm glad that that rule change certainly is an indication they're not being quite as harsh. But speaking of harsh, this has got to be the king of harsh as far as I'm concerned. Chinese Communist Party has decreed that their 88 million members are not allowed to have a country club membership. How would you like to own a country club in China right now? And the government tells you no more country club memberships.
Yeah, I don't really understand this. I'm not really sure. And I mean, when I get to China next week, maybe there'll be more clarity. But it seems a bit onerous, especially when they've gone ahead and approved all these clubs to be built to begin with. Now, you could say they approved the clubs to be built to begin with to allow for foreign players to come in, to allow for more revenue from outside the country to come in. And that was the reason why, which is certainly understandable. But, I mean, they're basically saying golf is, well, it's country clubs, so I can't say they're saying golf, but they're saying country clubs are not a good idea for their members. And I'm not really sure I understand why, but I'm sure they have a reason.
Well, do me a favor when you get to China next week, please don't question anybody about the rule. Just accept it as it is. I don't want any harsh penalties coming in the direction of my partner, Alex Maselli.
All right. Recently, Bob, I know you had a chance to sit down with Ty Votaw, the chief marketing officer for the PGA Tour, but more importantly, for this interview, the vice president of International Golf Federation, and therefore at the forefront of the successful efforts to get golf into the Olympics, which it will be in 2016 at the Rio Olympics. He's up next when we return to the Grill Room.
You're listening to the Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Open champion Zach Johnson agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
With us now in the Grill Room, Ty Votaw needs no introduction, but he is the chief marketing officer for the PGA Tour. And more importantly, for this interview, the vice president of the International Golf Federation. And Ty, thanks for taking a little time out. Counting the days, 317 until the opening ceremony down in Rio for the Olympics. It seems like we've been talking about the Olympics for quite a long time, and now it's a big spot on that radar screen.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that we started the process in the spring of 2008 to begin the campaign to bring golf back to the Olympic Games for the 2016 Games. That took 18 months until we were successful in October of 2009, and the IOC typically gives venue cities and or host cities and sports 7 years out to plan for their Olympic Games, like they did with Brazil in 2009 and they did for golf in 2009. It's hard to believe that we're 6 years have passed and we're under a year to get to the open ceremony and the golf competitions for the men and women, and it's been a great experience for all of the various people who have been involved in since day one, and one that I've always said is one of my prouder experiences, simply because it brought everybody in the game of golf together to look at this in a unified way. And, you know, there are a lot of organizations in golf, a lot of different alphabet amalgamations of organizations, and having them all come together with a common purpose was very gratifying.
Ty, let's begin with, is the golf course going to be to the standard that you want it to be when the first ball is being struck?
We hope so. We went down there last month. A number of us walked the golf course with Gil Hans, the architect, and it's the golf course is completely grassed, and the construction is inside the ropes is virtually complete. We've had a good first grow-in season. The golf course is grassed, tee to green, with very few exceptions to that. It's now a living, breathing venue, and we have to make sure that between now and whenever we hold a test event, and then from the test event to the Olympic Games, that the amount of resources, staffing, manpower, equipment, cultural practices like verticutting and top dressing and aerating the golf course happens, so that we can bring this living, breathing venue up to a place where it's capable of hosting a competition of this stature. It looks good right now, but looks aren't really what we're after. We're after a golf course that's going to be really in phenomenal condition for the best players in the world.
Is the format cast in stone at this juncture? And if it is, could you give a 30-second explanation of what's going to transpire?
It is cast in stone for the 2016 Games. It's going to be 72-hole stroke play, 60 players, 60 men, 60 women, no cut. Right now, if the world rankings were today's world rankings were used to for the games, and they were and the games were held tomorrow, there'd be about 34 countries on the women's side and 35 countries on the men's side represented. We chose 72-hole stroke play because we felt that's the standard of excellence in our sport in terms of how significant golf championships are determined. Major championships, the Players' Championship, etc. We also thought that you know, given the fact that when match play, half the field gets eliminated in the first day, we wanted to see as many players play as many days as possible, so that countries that might not otherwise have a lot of Olympic athletes but may have a golfer would have that experience over a four-day period. We also think that with match play in the final day, you really only have four people having a chance at a medal. In stroke play, it's you can see this weekend and see how many players are within five strokes of the lead going into Sunday, which creates a lot more excitement across countries who have athletes in the games as golfers, and we think that's a good thing.
Ty Votaw is with us. He's the vice president of the International Golf Federation. We're talking everything Olympics. Let me ask you a couple of questions that perhaps the average person would be interested in hearing the answers. Obviously, the golfers that are going to represent the United States are going to be highly successful golfers, multimillionaires. Who's going to pay for them to get to Rio?
Well, they'll be part of the U.S. Olympic team, which is operated or created by the United States Olympic Committee. So that is going to be between those athletes and its Olympic Committee from the United States, just like every other player from other countries will be relying on their Olympic Committees, their national Olympic Committees, to represent themselves as Olympic athletes for that National Olympic Committee.
In your opinion, do you think they'll be staying in the Olympic Village? They're so used to, you know, renting nearby houses for their accommodation.
I think some will. I think some will. You know, the closest analogy as far as our sport, golf, being inserted into an Olympic Games would be tennis. You know, top tennis players, some stay in the Village, some have their own arrangements. Some have arrangements that are made by their national federations, if you will, a USA Golf or a Swedish Golf Federation, et cetera. And it's all a matter of personal preference. We, you know, we think that many will want to do it, maybe not for the entire during the entire stay, but to at least experience an Olympic Village because they've heard so many great things about those experiences from other athletes that they follow or are friends with.
What is the accommodations being made for spectators? And is there been a number tossed about on about how many spectators there'll be out there on any given day?
There are tickets on sale now that you can register for by going to the Rio website. I don't have that with me. We can get that to you. We have seen Brazil is not what you would call a hotbed of golf. There's only two golf courses in the city of Rio, two private golf courses. But we've been very encouraged with the amount of tickets that have been sold to date. The Rio Organizing Committee we met with when we were down there last month, and they were very encouraged by, especially on the final rounds of both the men's and the women's competition. They've been very, very pleased with the amount of tickets, and we're looking at the area of somewhere from 12,000 to 18,000 a day, which we think on this golf course would look and feel significant.
Will the men and women be playing basically at the same time?
No, the men's competition will take place on the Thursday to Sunday of the first week of the Olympic Games, and then the women's competition will be Wednesday to Saturday, the second week, because there are very few events that happen on the last day because all competitions have to be completed before the closing ceremonies, and we didn't want there to be any chance of weather delays or other types of things that would prevent the golf competition to be carried over into Sunday or into the closing ceremony. So theirs will be Wednesday to Saturday. The second week.
As we put a bow tie on our time with Ty Votaw, do you have a major concern as we're 317 days out from golf going back to the Olympics? If you do have a major concern, what is it?
Well, I think that we just have to make sure that we do everything we can to assist Rio 2016, the organizing committee, the landowner developer who's building the golf course. We need to start working with our athletes to talking them about what it means to be in an Olympic Games as an Olympic athlete. That relates to accommodations, that relates to credentials, that relates to anti-doping, that it relates to any number of different things that are going to be new because we're an Olympic sport. And it's just a lot of work to get done in 317 days, and we're looking forward to it because we see We've worked hard up to this point. We don't want to let up, and we want to make sure that golf puts its best foot forward when we get back into the game, so that everybody who voted for us will feel good about their decision.
Well, we felt good about our decision. Asked you to spend some time with us in the grill room, as always, Ty Vota. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Bob. Thank you.
The grill room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the grill room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Ricky Fowler agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Make Cool Brella the next purchase for your golf bag. The Cool Brella is instant portable shade. It's an umbrella that reflects the sun, offering portable, effective protection from the sun. Whether playing or spectating, the Cool Brella protects from the harsh rays of the sun while providing a cool, comfortable shade. For more information on the perfect gift for you or any golfer, log on to CoolBrella.com. That's K-O-O-L-B-R-E-L-L-A.com. Cool Brella, instant shade and all-weather comfort.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at healthysightforlife.org.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Well, my thanks to Ty Vota for sharing that information with our grill room listeners. Before we blink, Alex, it will be summertime and it will be the Olympics. Speaking of that, why not go to what's next on the schedule? The European Tour. You're there, Alex. The Turkish Airlines Open played on a pretty good golf course.
Yeah, it's not bad. The Montgomery Max Royal course. It's been, this will be the third year here. The first year, Victor Dubuisson won, I thought, in pretty impressive fashion. Last year, it was Brooks Koepka. In both cases, it was the third leg of the four-leg race to Dubai. But this year, due to some political issues in regards to having the G8 summit or G12 or somebody's coming here, they had to move it. So now it's the first week of the swing instead of the third week. And I think what that does is it gives them a better field. And if you take a look at this field, you go with Rory McIlroy's here. You got Ryder Cup captain Darren Clark. Poulter is here. Graham McDowell, Lee Westwood. And then you got Matthew Fitzpatrick, who's played very, very well this year in the later stages after winning British Masters, finishing third in Hong Kong last week. And then there's also players like John Daly. So, I mean, you look around and you're like, you know, this is a pretty good field. I saw Charles Schwartzel come in earlier. So I think this is a better field than they would have anticipated. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that it's the first week of the race to Dubai versus the third.
All right. We go to the PGA Tour, Alex, CIMB Classic. Ryan Moore, he liked it the last 2 years. He's going for a three-peat. Where are they going to be playing that again?
Well, unless you know something more than I do, it's a Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia.
That's what I hear, and I hear it's awfully hot and muggy there.
Well, then the tour put out a thing about a concern about typhoid and certain things you can and can't do, and or you shouldn't do, I should say, in regards to eating. There's a lot of restrictions. It's almost like I'm not sure what you're going to be able to eat. Everything needs to be cooked and cooked pretty well. You know, it's been a good event in the past. A lot of those guys go right from CIMB. They go right to China, to the HSBCs in Shanghai. So this year, Adam Scott, Henrik Stenson, Ernie Els, Sergio Garcia, and Luke Donald are in the field. The only guys that I know for sure they'll be at HSBC are going to be Stenson and I think Garcia. I don't think the other guys will, but it's still a good event. And the way it's worked out, it's a 78 player field, limited field event, and they pay for the players to be over there, and it's a no cut event. So basically, bottom line is, it's if you're a pretty good player, you want to go.
Help clear something up. I know there are appearance fees involved in this event. You alluded to that, but yet it's listed under the PGA Tour. How does that happen?
Well, there's not appearance fees. What they do is they pay for everybody to come over, and then they guarantee obviously some money because it's a limited field, so there's no cut. That's how it works. That's the only way the tour could ever get the players over there on a consistent basis. And actually, from the beginning, when they first started, when they used to give you two tickets and do other things, they slowly started whittling away at the benefits of going over there. But there are still benefits of going over there.
All right, let's swing to the LPGA Tour. Oh, pretty good event here, Alex. It's the fourth event on the annual Asian Swing. This is the Blue Bay LPGA, played at Hainan Island, China. South African Leanne Pace is defending champion, but Lydia Ko's in the field. She comes in guns a-blazing.
Yeah, she does. And the golf course in Hainan Island is really nice. So the ladies are going to have a good time this week. And Lydia Ko, you're right, she is coming guns a-blazing. And I mean, NB Park would like to get her world number one back. Be interesting to find an American that could win once in a while out there. Obviously, we had one recently in Lexi Thompson. But bottom line is it's a bit of a drought this year for American players. So maybe this will be the difference this week in Hainan Island.
And Alex, on the Champions Tour, Toshiba Classic. Fred Couples defending in Newport, California. A great part of the planet. And certainly a good event. It's the last event on the Champions Tour schedule for 2015, and this will determine who gets into that season-ending Charles Schwab Cup Championship. Colin Montgomery holding a very thin advantage of 39 points over our good buddy Jeff Magid, and by 66 points over Bernhard Langer. Looks like this year going to be a real battle for that Charles Schwab Cup.
Yeah, and I think, if you're Magid, who held that position at the top for a while, you don't have to worry too much. You want to play decently here, but that where you really want to play well is going to be at the Schwab Cup Championship, which is the following week. So we'll see what happens. But, I have to say this, even though I'm a little biased, if I look at those three players, no matter what happens in the Charles Schwab Cup Championship, to me, Jeff Magid is player of the year because of the majors he won this year.
Well, I have to second that opinion, and if it was just based on good guys, Jeff Magid would win in a landslide. Seems strange, but he's going to make his debut. He turned 50, Todd Hamilton, and then in April, I got this little note here, John Daly turns 50 in April. He will be a godsend for that Champions Tour as far as the galleries go.
Yeah, I'll talk to him this week about that, actually, Bob, because he's here, as we said earlier, in Turkey. He likes playing here. Actually, his last win came here, not at this event, but at another event. So it'll be interesting to see what John has to say about turning 50. When I did talk to him we were taking the van from the one terminal to another in Istanbul earlier. He did say that he's pretty healthy, as healthy as he can expect to be at this time of his career. So. You never know. A healthy John Daly could make a big difference on that Champions Tour.
He certainly could. And I think even John Daly, 50% healthy, people are going to flock to see him play. And I think he is going to be a welcome addition. He's certainly a crowd pleaser, has been that his entire career.
You've been listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfBlot.com and GolfWeek.com. Heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network. By the way, The Grill Room is also available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, and of course on our website, thegrillroom.com.
A big thank you to all of our listeners and to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and Eye on Loop, to golfblot.com, and, of course, golfweek.com. So for Janice Self, the executive producer, Alex Maselli coming to you from Turkey, and myself, Bob Bubka, a thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at the Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.